Lost somewhere deep in the ancient depths of the Innsmouth archives, hot on the trail of some new archaeotech. We are 665.66 UHMR Chemrat Radio, equipped, as always, with an overabundance of plasma technology. I am your host, Goblin King, and helping me peel back the ancient crusted layers of Arconia's history one by one, my guide toward all things lost treasure is the archaeo-savant, Chalk.
And your guide to all the librarians here in the, what are we calling it?
You don't want to find the librarian. She's mean.
We are in the archives, but does she wear a short skirt?
We're not. We'd have to ask her. at some point, I do promise, we did record two episodes with a friend podcast of ours that specifically deals with literature and like reviews books. They're a book review podcast by my friend Michelle, and Michelle and I recorded two episodes. However, it was before I knew how to use Riverside, and apparently if you select producer as your title, you don't record, you just watch. So Michelle's character is the archivist. We don't want to run it. The archivist doesn't like when you touch her books.
Not what I was planning on touching. Luckily, my wife does not listen to this.
Welcome to episode 99 of Under the Hive of Madness. It's pretty crazy. It's really weird because I think we've released like almost 150 episodes, but
yeah, but this is of, they're all different things.
Yeah. Yeah. Welcome to episode 99 of Under the Hive of Madness, Warhammer Origins, a complete timeline part one. In this two-part series, Chalk and I will focus on the release side of the GW products for the Warhammer 40K side of the universe. And by that, we mean the games and the editions of the games and the standalone specialty games that were released. So instead of going back and looking at some of the literature that inspired Warhammer 40K or really deep diving into how the lore was developed, as we've done with our last couple of episodes in the Warhammer Origins series, now we're kind of switching focus into physical product. When the physical product was released, what was playable? That's kind of the aim that we're going for. What was in the first edition of Warhammer 40K? How did it play? What races were introduced? To kind of give you guys an idea of how the game has evolved for the last 40 years, roughly. Just about 40 years, roughly. And also, it gives us an opportunity to dive into some of this stuff. When we're only focused on the lore side, and we don't take these moments to look at the hobby side, we miss out on some of the cool stuff, like Epic, for instance, Necromunda, Battlefleet Gothic, Inquisitor. We were talking about Inquisitor earlier before we started recording, which is a 54mm scale, very beloved but incredibly short run specialty game that the Games Workshop released. There's obviously like Cursed City, Blackstone Fortress. So there's all these properties around it. And of course, we're going to continue, at least currently, to focus on the 40K side of it. We actually haven't talked about whether or not we're going to bend Warhammer Origins and look at the old world side of it. Probably not a bad idea. We just haven't done it yet.
Yeah. I mean, I'm really into that. I came from both sides.
Yeah, same.
Of the game. And of course, a lot of, you know, you can look at all the fantasy stuff that played into the old world, but I read a lot of that, but for me, it was the books that were set in the old world back in that time period. I don't know when they started doing the Felix and Godric's books.
A while ago.
Date was on those, but I remember reading them at the beginning and all, you know, loving that. And of course, Old World's coming out next
month. Yeah, Old World, I think it's out, actually.
Oh, they've done the pre-order on it? I think they just said what's going to be the pre-order.
Oh, maybe they did the pre-order. They did one of those. I'm trying to see so they're all listed as 1999 as their first published date, but I feel like that's because there was a reissue.
I think they reissued a lot of stuff that I think predated 99.
Yeah, because
like I think like some of the the Kane books predate that, but I think they were also listed for 99.
Yeah. So Troll Slayer, Skaven Slayer, and Demon Slayer are all listed as 1999. And that's actually a weird thing. I kind of have it down as a note, and we'll talk about it when we come to it. I think we'll talk about it when we come to it. I may have pulled it from the notes. But the idea of the Black Library was actually pitched really early. And whether or not it was one of those things where they like made sure to get that copyright locked down and didn't know what they were going to do with it. But Black Library, as we know it, launched in 97. But there are books that were written for the Black Library before the Black Library was a publishing house.
Okay, so I'm wrong here. It says that the first Kane book was in 2002. I swear, okay, it was before that I read it.
But it feels like it was before. I mean, it feels like it for the Felix and Gottrick stuff too. But yeah. I mean, that is the weird thing about memory. It's incredibly fallible.
And remember, we were actually buying books back then.
Yeah, like physical books.
Physical books.
But yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm in the same boat. I actually found out, for those of you who listen to the podcast, I'm sure you follow other content that's out there in the Warhammer world. And one of my favorite new content creators is Rogue Hobbies. I think she's only been very obviously somebody who's been in the community for a lot longer than a year, but I believe her channel as Rogue Hobbies, Luisa's channel as Rogue Hobbies, has only existed for about a year. She used to work for Forge World. She used to work for Games Workshop Specialty. And she was one of the people that did some the painting content, and she did some other content for them. But she just released, I want to say like a week or two ago, or maybe 3 weeks ago. It was during the holidays. One of her holiday adjacent or holiday season videos was about the movies that have that Warhammer feel to them. Mm-hmm. And every single movie she listed are things that we have talked about on the podcast in agnosium.
With the exception of one. I just subscribed to her channel.
you just did?
Yeah.
She's got some great stuff.
I hadn't found her before.
She brought up a movie called Jabberwocky that came out in the early 80s that John Blanche actually states is one of his inspirations for a lot of the way that he designed stuff in Warhammer Fantasy.
I remember hearing that.
I had never heard of this movie until she said something, and I specifically went out and found it. It is on its way to me. Unfortunately, I don't think it'll get here before I go to China, which is a little sad because it means I won't be able to watch it when I'm in China, but I am going to watch it. I'm very excited.
It's Terry Gilliam, Michael Palin. It's the Monty Python crew.
Yeah. Yes. Well, yeah. It looks interesting. Apparently, a lot of the visuals, a lot of the monsters and stuff are very John Blanche style. So that's why I'm interested in checking it out. I don't know if you had I don't know if you had some 3D prints or something finished, but something
they just finished.
Okay. It beeps.
Six.
What machine do you have?
That's a Mars 3.
Oh, yeah. My machine doesn't beep when it's done. It's just like, okay, I'm done, bro.
Yeah, that is six mini Sicarans.
Nice. Very nice.
They can sit there and drain.
There he goes. Yeah. So to kick this off, let's talk about the granddaddy that launched it all. And we've covered it a little bit in the past because we looked at it from the inspirations and why I think in our first episode of Warhammer Origins, mm-hmm. we talked about it. But the first edition of Warhammer was Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader, and that was released in 1987. This first edition is often just referred to as Rogue Trader. That's how a lot of people talk about it in the community. We don't say first edition. We don't say Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader. We just call it Rogue Trader.
Yeah.
And the reason that the title is Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader is because the working title, the in-house title, the secret title, was Rogue Trader. But it was based on the Rogue Trooper comic. It was published in 87, designed by Rick Priestley, who created the original rule set alongside the Warhammer 40,000 game world. The rule book is an amazing artifact of gaming history. I've got one. I know you've got one. It is very much a product of the role-playing gaming 1980s aesthetic. It is jam-packed with rules that don't necessarily make sense, lore that contradicts itself. Little tidbits, awesome black and white art. It's kind of a mess, but a lot of rule books back then were kind of a mess. So it's kind of funny. In comparison to modern 40K rule books, it's a mess. In comparison to things being released in the 80s, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Most of the stuff that's in the book has survived into the modern game in some way, shape, or form. There have been a lot of changes, but a lot of it's sort of survived. However, Rogue Trader was much more a role-playing heavy game, a much more role-playing centric game, looking more into very small skirmishes rather than the pitched battles that we get nowadays. Now, I never originally played Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader. I don't have a lot of direct experience with first edition during the time of first edition. Now, you have played and did play a lot of first edition though, right?
Yeah.
So walk us through like a game.
All right. So you didn't have to have a game master,
right?
But it was suggested that you do because, okay. So when you play 40K today, you have objectives that you have to cancel, that you have to capture.
Right.
You have to sit on them to gain a point or whatever. So let's go back to one of the scenarios that I read the most recently, because I haven't, a lot of these scenarios were you know, in White Dwarf or other magazines. And so let's go to a non-GW magazine that published a adventure. And this adventure featured the Little Sisters of Purification, which is a female Space Marine chapter. But that's not why I'm talking about it. Why I'm talking about it is that you had two teams, and that the Space Marine team, one of the things you had to do is you had to take your ADMEC allies to different rooms on this base where they had to roll dice to fix machines. Now, does that sound familiar? That sounds like the game mechanic for any role-playing game or even a lot of video games where you've got the guy sitting there and you've got to sit and like press that button until the bar fills up and you've captured the unit or whatever.
Yeah, you got to like hold the room.
Yeah.
You're not really worrying about eliminating the enemy. You're protecting the room.
You're actually rolling dice to try to fix this machine to keep the, because you're like fixing a machine that keeps the sun from going supernova or something and destroying the planet. So you've actually, your ADMEC guys are sitting there. They have to fix the machine in this room and then go to another room and fix the machine in that room while they are being attacked by people who want to steal the tech. And by the way, there is a space vampire that's hiding in your adversaries and he might be able to slip into your party and you will take him back to the planet with you. Not known to you. This has nothing to do. This does not sound like your typical 40K game.
Yeah. Or you're walking down the corridor because you need to get to the next room and a giant space clam eats your leg.
Yes. I love the space clams. That's where, if you look at, and we've done before, you guys have done, I wasn't on the show, but the bestiary, the fauna of 40K, almost all of that comes from Rogue Trader. You don't have any of that in the current rule books. You don't have, so all the weird stuff from Catachan, all the stuff from, what's his name? What's that planet that comes from?
Luther McIntyre's 4 or something.
Yeah. All that all comes from Rogue Trader. A lot of the non-Imperium setting comes from Rogue Trader. The Catachan being a death world with the Catachan devils and the frogs that blow up and all that
frogs.
Crap.
Yeah.
That's all from Rogue Trader. And and you had the game master that'll be like placing the subterranean carnivorous clams on the battlefield that you would trigger when you walk over them.
Right.
Basically landmines. And it was also very heavy on doing things like where were different vehicles hit. I'm trying to remember back. I think it was also like where you were hit on your own body.
Yeah.
Like where a Marine was hit.
Yeah. The vehicle targeting rules had some cool, I made a note about it because I want to get into exactly what you're talking about. But yeah, there was the only thing that I can add or kind of get to, because you had mentioned female Space Marines, is Space Marines at this point were just Marines in space.
They were not the same thing.
Yeah, they were not genetic. The genetic side stuff hadn't. It is mentioned in the Rogue Trader book because they had started playing around with the idea of like super soldiers. But the whole idea of like just people in power armor, Space Marines were just people in power armor.
And if you look, I actually did a look through this one. You know, every once in a while I go off on the whole, you know, female Space Marine gatekeeping rant. Paint your minis how you want to fucking paint your minis. You want to have them be women, have them be women. That's fine. But I went through Rogue Trader and it is almost entirely gender neutral for the Marines.
Dude, look at that navigator right there.
Yes. You could play.
That navigator is crazy. I want that navigator. I want to find that navigator model. That is a crazy looking model.
And that's the other thing. You had things like you could play part of the Astro Telepathica. You could play a navigator. You could play a. What are the dudes that send the messages?
Astropaths.
Astropath. You could play an astropath. You could do all of this.
For $3, $6, or $9, you guys, if you want to know what we're reacting to, we look at pictures, and I've got a couple of the old sale sheets for the old metal models, the white, but we don't call them pewter, white metal models.
Yeah, they're not pewter, they're lead. they're lead alloy. You really don't want to touch them that much.
You don't want to be sucking on them. But we look at a bunch of different
stuff.
They
were painted with lead paint anyway, so
you know, that's fine. Yeah, like right. And I mean you were using your paint water was lead paint water.
Yeah.
Lead pipe water. So. The 80s were a wild time.
Why do you think there are so many serial killers in the late 70s?
Right. So elements of the setting, things like bolters, las guns, frag grenades, and even Terminator armor actually came from an earlier war game called Laser Burn, which was written by Brian Ansel. By the way, moment of silence. As of the day that we're recording this, Brian Ansel passed away yesterday.
Oh, wow.
One of the guys who formed a lot of the core of this game left us very recently. Even though these rules were later expanded by both Ansel and Richard Halliwell, they essentially came from another game system. Now, not a lot of Laser Burn exists in 40. Like, you wouldn't say that Warhammer 40,000 Rogue Trader is second edition Laser Burn because it's not really. It's more like it was more a little bit more akin to a zine, if you will, or something that you would go in and you would buy this manual to use system agnostically. And some portions of Laser Burn will crop up later when we talk about confrontation, but. To give you an idea, there were no rules or a lot of the rules and all of that, a lot of the additional rules and supplements and like what races and all that you could play didn't actually come out in this main book. A lot of that stuff came out later in White Dwarf magazine or was released specifically in a bunch of the 10 or so supplement books that came out later. And this is all still part of first edition. And those would be the first one was chapter approved Book of the Astronomicon. Then there was the Warhammer 40,000 compendium. Then there was the Warhammer 40,000 compilation. Then there was WOG Orcs. Then there were two Realms of Chaos books, not to be confused with the Realms of Chaos books in fantasy, even though there was some that they shared. And those were Slaves to Darkness and Lost in the Damned. Then there
was. I thought they were the same book.
They are, but they're used differently.
Yeah.
But the same. It's weird. This is the Wild West. Then there's Here We Go and Free Buddhas, which.
My favorite. Free Buddhas is my.
It's a good book.
My favorite book. And that's where you got hybrid Tyranid Orc hybrids.
Yep. And then there was the battle manual and the vehicle manual. And finally, with the battle manual and the vehicle manual, we got some damn rules. So both of these books clarified and set a lot of the combat rules and provided updated stats for most of the weapons in the game. The vehicle manual contained a new system for vehicle management on the tabletop, which cleared up a lot of the weird rules in the core rule book. And this is what you were talking about. They had this like targeting system that was actually these acetate crosshairs that you would hold up for line of sight to figure out where on the vehicle it was hit. based on the vehicle's silhouette. And then based on that, there were different armor values for different locations, which was a very interesting, it's very neat when you can find pictures of it. And I could not find large enough pictures of it to share with our Patreons. But when you can find pictures of it, you know, use your phone to search, because the picture will appear much nicer and bigger. But they're pretty neat. It's on this, it's like this little crosshair, acetate crosshair on like almost a slide rule. And then you use that as your line of sight position when you're shooting a vehicle to figure out where you hit it. And you guys have definitely heard us talk about armor location mattered until like sixth or seventh edition in 40K. It's only recently that it's went away. To give you guys an idea of the rest of the books, the Wog Orcs books contained a lot of lore and orcish culture and physiology, but no rules. So it was a lot of lore. And the other orc-themed books later on had a lot of your army lists for major orc clans and also greenskin pirates and mercenary outfits. And then the two most important books, according to Games Workshop, and this is probably because of the way that they changed a lot of stuff, were The Slaves to Darkness and The Lost and the Damned. And these added the Chaos Gods and the Demons, along with setting up the Horus Heresy's origin story. The original rule book in 1987, just to give you an idea, the Emperor was just bedridden, and it was because he was old. He was still able to actually run the Empire.
There was a civil war. They talked about some sort of civil war.
It was ongoing.
Yeah.
The idea of him being comatose and critically wounded came out in the Lost and the Damned books. And I mean, we're talking... all of these books released between 1987 and second edition, which was 1993. So this is not, I mean, you're talking like 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years all told. And that's with White Dwarf coming out all the time.
Yeah.
And to get back to what you were saying when you were talking about playing the game, a lot of times we kind of look at, I would say, and maybe I'm wrong, I'd like your opinion on this, but I say a lot of times you look at the Warhammer 40K edition based on the faction that it introduced. What faction did this edition introduce?
So, you know, coming up until, I'm trying to remember the actual, I don't have the PDF pulled up here in front of me, but the original Rogue Trader book had basically humans, space marines. The humans, you, like I said, you could play like telepaths and hit all these other things. It had orcs in it. It had squats in it. Did it have Eldar in it? I think it had Eldar in it.
It did. But and it wasn't really like you didn't really play a faction. You had races that you could pull from.
Yes. That was, and it was things like, you know, you'd have a space marine with razor guns or flechette guns or whatever.
Yeah, you'd have an Eldar in your space marine with your space marine. You had a half. There was a hero that was a half space marine, there was half space marine, half Eldar. Yeah. So some of the playable races, not playable factions, playable races, guys that you could pull to form your team, as Chalk was saying, so you could go into this room and secure the data, would be the Adeptus Terra. So Administratum, Arbites, Custodes, Mechanicus, or Astronomicon soldiers. Then there was the Inquisition, the Adaptus, Astra, Telepathica, Navigators, of course, Space Marines, Imperial Army, not Imperial Guard, Imperial Army, and then Assassins and Rogue Traders. And that was kind of all the humans that you could do. And then there were races like the Squats, Rattlings, Ogryn, and Beastmen that were also, they were mercenaries kind of aligned with the Imperium, if you want to say. And then there were the Xenos, which were the Eldar, the Orcs, the Slann, the Tyranids, and the Zotes. And then there was a menagerie of random ass monsters and plants that could attack you.
But I don't think, were those all in the actual original Rogue Trader book?
That's all in the original book, yeah. Okay.
I wasn't sure that Tyranids were in.
It's a Tyranid war. It's a really cool picture if you can find it. The Tyranid warrior in the Rogue Trader book almost looks more like a Chinese dragon. Like it's long and serpentine with little arms and legs rather than being more of what we see now.
You know, as an aside, I ordered one of the reprints and I have not received it.
Oh, I got mine directly from Europe, which I think is the only reason. But they the ones that they did for the US are print to order.
Yeah, I know. And I bought one and I have not received it. I did when they did that for like the Christmas thing.
Yeah, like, it was a couple
releasing it.
It was like, what, 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago?
Maybe. I'll have to look into it. I also like re-upped my White Dwarf magazine and have not received any of them, even though I have to like get in touch with.
There's the There's the Tyranid from, there's the Tyranid warrior from the Rogue Trader book.
So as you can see, I mean, a lot of the core was there, except you didn't have Chaos Space Marines. Matter of fact, you didn't have bad Space Marines.
You just had Space Marines with spikes.
Yeah. And you had, you had the, you had various chapters. You didn't have the whole backstory about legions. You had the chapters.
A lot of cases, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in a lot of cases, you made a mercenary band, right? It was your mercenary band versus my mercenary band. So you might have Space Marines, and I might have Space Marines, and we would fight against each other because we were different mercenary bands.
Yeah, and it's just like now. You have two Space Marine, you have people with Space Marine armies fighting each other. You have like two people with Ultramarines fighting each other. You don't have not have that. But it was more mixed also because you couldn't get the models like you think about them these days. You weren't getting like battle boxes of models.
Yeah, no, you were getting like two or three.
Yeah. And putting it together.
Boxes back then had like what, 3 to 5 guys in them?
Yeah, something like that. And you had chapters you've never heard of before, like Mentor Legion. They're not around anymore. Rainbow Warriors, people paint them up every once in a while, and mostly because they say they're like, oh, they're part of the Alphabet Guard. Push. But really, it was like more about Greenpeace back then.
Yeah.
But other than that, you had a lot of the familiar chapters. You know, you had the two angels. You had the Dark Angels or the Blood Angels. You had Ultramarines. You had White Scars. You had basically all the Loyalists.
Yeah. And a lot of that. So the White Dwarf and supplemental releases added what we look at as lists, essentially. A little bit more like we look at lists. So the Ultramarines, the Legion of the Damned, and the Mentor Legion, which you just mentioned, Space Marines, those all came out of White Dwarf. Then the Warhammer 40,000 compendium released generic lists for Space Marines. The first time we saw the word Imperial Guard used, although it was used interchangeably with Imperial Army still. And then squats, along with the option to run Chaos Squats, mm-hmm. and Eldar Harlequins. So you had Eldar in the main book, and then when we got a list, it was Eldar Harlequins. Then the Realms of Chaos books introduced the Grey Knights, the Black Legion, the World Eaters, the Emperor's Children, which would be the first time we saw, again, the main book has a couple of examples of in air quotes, because Loyalist and Traitor didn't really exist yet, Loyalist Marines. And then here we've got our first look at some Traitor Marines. And then you had Tzeentchian and Nurgle Renegades, which were just men, basically, that were aligned with one of those groups. And then the Orc releases featured the Goths, the Evil Suns, the Bad Moons, the Death Skulls, the Blood Axes, the Snake Bites, and obviously the Free Buddhas.
Which is the best.
Yep.
If you're going to run a faction, you need to run Free Buddhas, because who doesn't want an orc in a pirate hat with a pigeon?
Well, not 100. A parrot. And then the compilation book added the Craftworld Eldari. So they were the second Eldar, and they weren't Eldari yet, the Eldar.
Let's keep it straight.
And then the Gene Stealers Invasion Force, which was Gene Stealers, and the Gene Stealer Cults, which, as Chalk mentioned just a couple of moments ago, didn't necessarily have to be human.
No. As a matter of fact, if you go back, remember that the Gene Stealer Cults were at least partially introduced. I don't know how these came together, the time period, but within the Freebooters book.
Yeah. Yeah. They had the Orc Gene Stealers in the Freebooters book, and then the compilation book introduced the idea of a Gene Stealer cult list. Yeah. So rather than having Gene Stealer orcs in your Free Buddhas, now you could do Gene Stealer cults as its own list, essentially.
And they gave you instructions on how to build these guys, how to kitbash them.
Yeah. And at this time, Gene Stealers and Gene Stealer cults were not associated with the Tyranids yet. It was its own standalone thing. And then the very last things that came out, the very last things that got bigger lists more than a model or a paint job or a photo or a piece of art actually got lists were the Tyranids and the Space Wolves. And they got lists in White Dwarf releases that happened right at the cusp of 1993. And then the other thing that we want to mention, I think we already did mention it because you brought up the Black Library. Right around this time is also when they secured the rights for the name to the Black Library. And it's a little confusing because as a publishing house, it's listed as being founded in 1997. But we're having that, what do they call it? The Mandela effect?
Yeah.
Where both Chalk and I are pretty sure that we read books before 97 that were Black Library releases. However, I can say this for a fact that I would have to do a lot of digging to find something, but I remember publications that had either White Dwarf or Citadel Miniatures on it. That was the publishing house symbol that was part of the Black Library that was not the logo that we associate with post 1997. So I'll dig through my old books, but I think that might be it. I think they may have been Citadel Miniatures books or whatever it would have been. Whatever that was. No, Citadel was the. They would have been Games Workshop published books because that was the publishing house at that point.
Yeah,
maybe that's the difference. And be interesting if anybody has one of these old books out there. If Chalk and I aren't crazy, email us.
Well, let us know. It says here from Wikipedia that more than 150 novels were set in the shared universe of the Warhammer fantasy between 89 and 2015.
Okay, so. They must have started publishing stuff in like 88, 89.
Yeah.
They just weren't. So the Black Library is a publishing house now.
Yes.
It was not a publishing house before 97. The publishing house part started in 1997.
This says the first Warhammer 40,000 novel was Inquisitor by Ian Watson, published in 1990.
Yeah, that sounds right. And I swear.
Yeah.
And that would have been published under just the Warhammer 40K trademark. That would have been published.
Yeah, that was not Black Library.
Yeah, they would have probably said something like part of the Black, like in the foreword, this is part of the Black Library, blah, blah,
they had
blah.
They obviously had a publishing house because they were publishing rule books.
Yeah, and that the publishing division before Citadel Miniatures and before Games Workshop acquired Citadel Miniatures and they became one company, the Games Workshop side. I keep saying the Warhammer 40K side. The Games Workshop side was the publishing house and Citadel Miniatures was the miniature and hobby maker. And then those companies merged. They became one company. Even today, you still see artifacts as the difference. Like a lot of times we call the paint line the Citadel Miniatures paint line.
Mm-hmm.
But Citadel Miniatures has been part of Games Workshop since like what? Like 1989, I think, is when the merger happened.
That's basically when everything came together. I think 89.
So it also in 1988 was the release of Adaptus Titanicus. And this was the first version of the Epic rules that were published. And they dealt with battles specifically between opposing factions of Imperial Titans. Mm-hmm. And they also followed that up with rules for the infantry and vehicles in White Dwarf. And then in 1989, they released the Space Marine box, which was a miniature rule set that mm-hmm. gave you rules for two opposing Space Marine armies that could be used to and combined with Adaptus Titanicus. And this is the first time where we got this is where a lot of the like what we know of now as the Horus Heresy, this was when it was established.
Yeah, interestingly, as far as the timeline goes, so Space Marine and the first Realm of Chaos book was, they were both published a month apart.
Yeah. Yeah. All this stuff came out really close to each other.
So what you had is you had, I think Space Marine came out secondly, but of course that's just production schedule. That has nothing to do with writing or anything like that.
And the Space Marine thing that we're talking about, what it's a supplement, but it was a supplement in a battle box.
Yeah, it basically was a supplement to Adeptus Titanicus, but it was a standalone game that I'm talking about. Space Marine 1 was I've got the box behind me someplace. I don't know where it is. It's up there someplace. You know, it's a full just like full box release size. And it was basically just battles between Space Marines. That's why it's called Space Marine. And to do that, you had to have two opposing sides. And what you had is you had six chapters on one side, or legions on one side, and six on the other. So you had the traitor legions and the loyalist legions. That's the one I had. You go back one click.
Yeah, I was trying to find the back of the box.
Yeah. And
such a so great painting there. To do that, Dolph Lundgren right there in the front.
It's like, why are they fighting each other? So they set up the lore. That's where the whole heresy lore came out. Because basically, Space Marine, the original, is set in the Horus Heresy. It is the Horus Heresy. That's basically what you're fighting.
Yeah, and this is the release that established it, essentially.
Right. And so they're setting up the lore there. And at the same time, they're releasing the Realms of Chaos books that talk about the Chaos God and all that. And these are both coming out a month apart.
Yeah.
And so 89 is, or end of 88, beginning of 80, like one came out in December, one came out in January.
Yeah, Titanicus came out in 88. And that was when you got the first Titans that you could play with. And then Space Marine came out.
I think it came out in
January.
January of 89.
The Realms of Chaos books came out. Realms December of Chaos 88. Books were fourth quarter 88. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just came out with release schedule. You don't release all your games at one point in time because then nobody can buy them, right? You got to save up money from release to release.
And just production schedule stuff.
Yeah.
From the moment of designing a product to the time that a product is on the shelf, even in the modern day of rapid prototyping and rapid production, you're looking at like 2 years.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 1987, Rogue Trader comes out. 1989, 2 years later, stuff is starting to change. And like this is a relatively rapid, if you think about it, production cycle.
Yeah.
To get into the fiddly bits, Adeptus Titanicus included six plastic Titan models with swappable weapons and styrofoam buildings.
Yeah.
And Space Marine included foldable card buildings with styrene roofs, so plastic roofs, alongside spurs of infantry and vehicles. And these all are epic scale. So you're talking five Marines on a square plastic base or standalone vehicles.
On a 20 millimeter square base, standalone, you got rhinos and land raiders.
Yep.
You've got basically two different colors of Marines, so you didn't have to paint them if you didn't want to. You got like blue and green.
Dark blue and dark green, sir.
Yes, they're very distinguishable on the table, on a black little base. I've got those buildings and all. I mean,
the buildings are cool.
They came out with, which I'm about to reuse, by the way, so they will come out. They're a little small for the new game, but they will work just fine. And I could take them to my local GW store where I can't take any 3D printed scenery.
They don't let you take anything 3D printed to the store?
No. They won't let me.
Is it an actual Games Workshop store?
Yeah, it is. An actual Warhammer store. Gotcha. But I could take the old stuff or I could take scratch built stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I have a lot of 3D printed bits on some of my stuff that the local store has had. My local Warhammer store has had some of my paint jobs in their case that have like a 3D printed shoulder pad because it's a special chapter or whatever.
It depends. And this is as an aside, but sort of interesting. There is not actually a policy from Games Workshop as such. Yeah.
You just can't use it in tournament play. So my local store says
no 3D printed stuff because people ask, where can you buy that? That's what she explained to me.
That kind of makes sense. They don't want to compete against themselves.
Right. So my wife's family lives down in San Jose, about 2 hours from me. I was down there and I went to a Warhammer store down there and I was talking to the manager and he's like, as long as I could recognize a GW model at the core of what you're bringing in, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, that seems to be a little bit more consistent with what I see. And that used to be the rule. The rule used to be it had to be 45% or 55% GW plastic. The original chapter approved. There's a really famous picture out there of a grav tank that is literally a deodorant bottle.
And they had instructions on how to build that.
Yep. And that's it. And I have that chapter approved sitting on my shelf so that it used to be a thing. Of course, with the original version of Epic, the Adeptus Titanicus and the Space Marine battle kits that we're talking about. White Dwarf continued to support the game with a variety of optional rules, army lists, and organizational charts. This is them fluffing everything out. The biggest supplement for the game was called Codex Titanicus, which provided a medium for linking the Titan-based combat with the conventional units of Space Marine.
Yeah.
So this is what allowed you to play them both at the same time.
Yeah, because before codex, you couldn't just right. swap out, put a Titan down on the table with your Space Marine army. There was no rules for that.
And then that codex also includes the first mention of Eldar Titans. Adeptus Titanicus more or less stagnated apart from the introduction of smaller war machines that were called Knights, both Imperial and Exodite Eldar, and later the appearance of the mutated Chaos Titans. So basically, the Space Marine side, I believe, or no, I'm sorry, the Titanicus side dried up. Other than the fact that people wanted Knights and the crazy looking things to paint.
Yeah,
Space Marine continued to do relatively well, though, right? Because they expanded that to Imperial Guard, Orc, Eldar, Squats, Chaos, and Tyranids in 6th.
Yeah, so basically, Space Marine is what we call now first edition Epic, which everybody goes like, okay. It's sort of like Space Marine 1 and Adeptus Titanicus are like Rogue Trader.
Yeah, they're two standalone games that ended up becoming one standalone game that's essentially first edition Epic. Yeah.
Yes, and then that was superseded by second edition Epic. And that's what people started playing. And that's what the new game is.
It's like a refresh of. It's
a refresh. The rules are quite similar. They don't have the rules that we see in third edition and fourth edition. So they're really, the rules are the way that they do close combat, the way that they do firing, and all this is really Space Marine. It's really Epic second edition.
Just to clarify, it's 6mm, but it's not 6mm. And the reason is because scale doesn't work. Explain the scale.
Okay, so in classic Epic, what happened? They came out with a size for Adeptus Titanicus that looked good on the table, right? These giant walking machines, right? They looked good. And then they came out with Space Marine, which is sort of like nominally a 6mm size game, which is.
And that was just the height, right?
That was the height of a Space Marine was 6mm.
But if you were to scale the Space Marine up to 28mm and scale the Titan up to 28mm or to 20. If you were to scale them both up in the same ratio,
the Titan would be
a lot smaller than it should be.
The Titan would be like the size of a Knight.
Okay. I got you. And then obviously you had mentioned with the picture of the squats that we've got up.
Yeah. Those were like 4 or 5mm tall.
And then the tanks would be all weird.
The tanks were always too small. You've got a land train there and a hellbore. These are, huge war machine.
Well, and those are
war machines on the scale of Titan.
Those are Land Raiders in blue, right? Over there?
It's really small on my screen.
So we're looking at a picture.
Those are listeners. Rhinos.
Okay.
The blue ones are rhinos.
So looking at the Epic scale, so looking at the 1980s Epic scale Rhino in size comparison to a squad of 5 squats, those 5 squats would not fit in that Rhino.
No.
I know that Rhinos have that problem anyway in 28mm. Yeah. We were talking about how scale just isn't really a thing. Like, scale is very difficult in games. And like the Land Raiders and the Rhinos, the vehicles in 40K, you know, 28mm, heroic 28mm are not, they should be bigger. They should be like 10% bigger.
Yeah. Twice the size. So what I was saying, so the way to think about this is that they came out with Adeptus Titanicus first.
Okay.
And they figured out the size that looks good on the table. And they went with that and they were consistent within that. But that was fine because there were no other units.
Right.
When they came out with Space Marines, they came out with them being nominally 6mm. They really aren't. But what a Space Marine was 6mm tall. Now, of course, a Space Marine's actually like 8mm. It's actually like 8 feet tall. And so it doesn't quite work with a 6mm scale.
They're not using a ratio scale based on the height of a human to figure out the height of the miniature.
Right. But when you compare if a Space Marine is 6mm scale, the Titans were actually 2 to 3mm, which is why I'm doing some.
They were like half the size they were supposed to be. Okay,
so I'm doing some hobby 3mm armies because it fits with my classic Titan.
Got it.
Much better. Like you put the classic Titans together with the class with a 3mm Space Marine, they look about right.
Okay, and then
now with the new,
yeah,
this is if you are a patron and you see the screen, the Legions Imperialis. This is quarter scale, which makes sense.
They took the existing size of all of the units in Warhammer 40K as far as 32mm went, and then they just made them a quarter the size.
Yeah.
And you were saying it's closer to like 8mm or 9mm?
Yeah, it's about. So what they did is it started out once again with Adeptus Titanicus.
Right. Because they're quarter scale Titans.
Right. And everybody was saying, like, how's it? But if you measure a Forge World Titan and you measure an Adeptus Titanicus Titan, they're a quarter the size.
Got you.
And if you go through and you measure a 40K plastic Rhino and you measure one of the new Legions Rhinos, it's a quarter of the size. And so when you do that, if you say that a Space Marine is about 32mm and you take a quarter of that size, you say, well, that goes to about 8mm. Actually, the guys are, Space Marines are taller than that, so they sit about 9 to 10mm tall.
Okay.
Which works fine, which is perfect. And that's what actually hobbyists, that's a scale hobbyists have been using for a long time now.
Because it's like a happy medium. It's easier to paint. It's not.
Well, also, when Adeptus Titanicus came out and said, these are about quarter scale. Everybody's like, well, we're just going to do everything in quarter scale. And then GW also did it in quarter scale. So I was printing vehicles before any of this was
released. Yeah.
Or even mentioned. People thought it was coming, but nobody knew anything. And guess what? They're the exact same size as the plastic ones that GW released.
That's
because
awesome.
People were taking the 28mm models and cutting them
by a quarter.
They were
reducing them to a quarter. Yeah.
Yeah. Which didn't fit with the old stuff. And you had everybody was like, well, I've got my old models and my new models and blah, blah, blah. And go online. There were discussions forever about this.
It was a controversy.
Yeah. And I did it too, because like I wanted stuff to match my old models and blah, blah, blah. And I've got some 3mm painted Space Marines that are almost the size of my old 6mm original Space Marines.
Okay. So they fixed scale.
They fixed scale.
The answer is they fixed scale. And hopefully that helps. So next up is Necromunda. And we're going to refer to it as Necromunda because it takes place in Necromunda and everybody calls it Necromunda. But the first edition of Necromunda was actually called Confrontation.
It was the first skirmish game.
And that was a low model count skirmish game. And that was released it was published in White Dwarf, like a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about, in 1990 to 1991. It was set on the Hive World of Necromunda. The game concentrated on various types of gangs, clan warriors from the Spires, or brat posers from the upper levels, which were going down to experience the thrills of low life with the undercity mutants, diseased scavengers, and the toxic wasters, as well as the Adeptus Darbides that were ever ready to come in and do their Judge Dredd style street justice. The miniatures were mostly designed, actually all the miniatures were designed by John Blanche at this period, and the game's background also included elements that were later reused and have become staples in Necromunda, such as the psychic drug spook, not as the spooks, but as a psychic drug spook, and the caryatids, which are now, everybody just calls them cherubs, but the creepy cherubs that are now kind of everywhere used to be a really big part of Necromundan life. They were not part of 40K. And I think cherubs at this point are actually associated with a different planet. But the creepy, dead-looking, blue-skinned, winged babies that John Blanche came up with, they were originally a Necromunda thing.
And, currently, lore, these have nothing to do with humans. They are not servitors or nothing like that. I think they're monkeys.
They're
dogs.
Yeah, They're a weird other thing. Yep. And confrontation, as far as a rule set went, confrontation was incredibly complex. And a lot of that had to do with the way that its combat system was. And again, as we've already mentioned, this goes back to Brian Ansel's earlier game, Laser Burn. A lot of confrontation was just Laser Burn.
I'm shocked that GW would come out with overly complicated rules.
Yeah, no shit, right? I played a lot of confrontation. It was really, really popular in my late high school, early college gaming group because it was a lot easier to play with small model counts. And a lot of us had, like, we had Warhammer collections, but we did not have armies. We had like 7 Eldar, 2 Ratlings, 3 yeah. Space Marines. A lot of that was going on at that time. And a lot of it was so this game came out, Confrontation came out in 1990. I was playing it in 99 to like 2001, 2002, right before the drop of Necromunda proper, which was in 2003. When that came out, I got the book and I moved over to new Necromunda, obviously, because the new hotness was out. But I got to experience Confrontation at the end of its cycle. And Chalk and I mentioned this in our production meeting when we talked a little bit about how we were going to set up the episode. A lot of the time period of the late 90s, early 2000s, and even at early 90s and late 80s, this entire time period from the late 80s to the early 2000s was the time period of the zine, of the pamphlet in the store, of going to a gaming convention and getting better rules. So you would learn Confrontation from White Dwarf. You would play Confrontation for a year or two with your buddies. And then you guys would all go to a convention. And, you know, the big convention everybody knows about nowadays is Adepticon. And Adepticon's been around long enough that it's worth mentioning. But you would go to an event like Adepticon. And the Adepticon organizers would be like, look, we've been running Confrontation for 5 years. Here is our Confrontation packet. And they would give you a packet of rules, and then you would start playing with those rules. And then people would take those rules and they would go and they would either make their Xerox copy zines to share with their friends or on college campus, or old bulletin board servers online before anything Web 2.0, before anything social media existed, when we had to use BBS boards to get all of our mm-hmm. information. There were these big, you know, some of them still exist. Daka still exists. That's a huge yeah. wargaming forum. And we would get all of these like supplemental and fixed rules. And so we were playing. The best way to explain it, Chalk, and maybe you'll agree with me or maybe you'll think I'm crazy, but we were playing this weird sort of like streamline yet bloated rule set. Like, it had bloat because you had 9,000 people who contributed to writing it, but it was way better and streamlined because those 9,000 people had been playing games and making it better.
Well, I didn't do a lot of stuff at like conventions at all. Okay. So for us, it was streamlined because you'd have these overly complicated rules. It was like, that's crap. We're not going to do this every time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, instead of rolling a really good example that I can come up with off at the top of my head, was you used to have to roll a ballistic skill check to shoot, and then you had to roll to see if you hit.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to roll one. Those are now one. That's now one roll.
Yeah.
If I roll a one, there's a problem with my gun. But if I roll anything over a one, I'm just trying to hit you. And if I beat you, I'm hitting you.
Yeah.
Like, why roll two dice when I can roll one dice? Like,
so it took out a lot of that. And also, when you talk about the rules, we didn't necessarily make a lot of distinction between what was an official GW publication, because a lot of us couldn't get them, and what was another game magazine.
Yeah.
That because there was also White, published rules.
There was White Dwarf. There was Star Crusader. There was Dragon Magazine
yeah.
for D&D. I mean, there were a handful of magazines, and then of course all of the zines
it was
too.
The Traveler that it was G something. It was the one where we talked about the Little Sisters of Silence were in it. It was
I think it was Traveler magazine.
No, it was who put out Traveler? It was.
No, you're
by
right.
By the way, people keep on asking me to join a Traveler group on Facebook. I'm like, that's still going?
Oh yeah, a lot of people still play Traveler.
I played Traveler back. I tried to play Traveler back in the day. The problem is that you always died, like as soon as, like before you finish rolling up your character.
Well, that's the best. That's why people still like it. And like the big one that we've got now, if you guys aren't in the know, the big mag that exists, the big zine that exists is Mag 28. Mag 28 is just 28 millimeter gaming. And it's very Mag 28, very much Challenge magazine.
Challenge. Yeah, there it is.
And Mag 28 and 28 millimeter, it very much focuses a little bit more on the Blanchetsu style. And there's it's very cool. It's very grim dark. Mag 28 is a lot more grim dark than 40K is.
Yeah, it is.
And so Confrontation leads us into second edition Warhammer 40K. So this is the second edition of the main rule book for Warhammer 40K. Andy Chambers came in to reshape the lore in a way that was more serious and pessimistic. A lot of the slapstick went away and a lot of the grimdark started to come in. This is also when we had an overall theme that, and the main part of this, I guess I shouldn't say this is when, but the main part of this is when there was that turn from humanity is essentially fighting in this dire and hopeless losing scenario. There is not any hope that the Imperium is going to win in the grimdark of the far future. There is only war. The humanity is attempting to stave off their collapse. That was a second edition thing. Before that, the Emperor was still alive. The analogy that the Emperor was essentially, you know, martyring himself, Jesus on the golden throne to keep humanity alive for another day, didn't it really exist? That none of that existed in the Rogue Trader era. That all very much, though, solidified during second edition. Second edition pushed the introduction of army lists a lot more, and it put constraints on the composition of a player's army. So at this point, you now had to dedicate at least 75% of an army's strength by its total point value to units that were pulled from the same faction. So this is when you stopped seeing Space Marine and Eldar, a Space Marine Eldar squat force. Now you would have maybe some squats with some Space Marines, or maybe some Eldar with some Space Marines. But again, 75%, 25%. This way, the battles that the players played had a little bit more to fit in and start to develop the factional rivalries that are now described in the event. The mainstays of the setting came from this. An expansion box titled Dark Millennium was later released, which included rules for psychic powers. Another part of second edition that stands out is it gave a lot more attention to special characters representing specific individuals from the setting who had access to equipment and abilities beyond those of regular units. Again, there was a limit on this. You could only use 50% of your army points as your total to make these special characters. And for those of you who are familiar or who joined Warhammer within the last couple of years, this was the first edition that was nicknamed Hero Hammer for this exact reason.
Yeah.
Rogue Trader had minor heroes and major heroes, but they were like blank guy. Like blank guy is your minor hero. Blank guy is your major hero. Now you had like named dudes, and think of the named guys we know. Like Marius Khalgar was a guy, and you could give him specific weapons.
Oh, Rogue Trader, your guys had names, but they're like Gus.
Right, right.
And all you the could models make... had names. Every model had a name.
Oh yeah, they did all have a name. That is true. Some of them are great. My favorite one. I just looked at it is Uruk man's head. It is an orc holding a man's head.
Yeah. But all like the Space Marines had like, they had a name.
Right.
And seriously, some of them were like Gus.
Yeah. Frank. Yeah. But this was the time where you had like chapter commander.
Yeah.
Whatever. And chapter commander.
That's where you had like Cassius or whatever, you know, all those guys.
A lot of the names that we still talk about now came in second edition.
Just. One of the gripes that I have about modern 40K, I don't mind Primaris, bigger models. Well, you know what I mind? So you still have like the same Eldar units from second edition. You still have basically the same Orc units from second edition.
Yeah.
But you've got how many thousand new Space Marine types do you have? Why couldn't you have just kept the same tactical and destroyer guy?
And just made the model, make the models look a little different.
Yeah, they could have kept the same armament and still had like tactical. Well, did they have to make like, or just redo the same ones? Did they have, how many different Primaris units do you have now?
Exactly.
As opposed to looking at how many new orc units do you have? Well, you have a few. What about Eldar? When was the last time you got a new Eldar sculpt?
The first, I mean, pre-order right now. Striking Scorpions. We're finally getting them. So the first unit, we're jumping. All right, so let me finish up on second edition's contribution, and then we'll jump into this part. But so second edition's major contribution is it really set up the lore as we understood it up until 8th edition. You just brought up Primaris, which shifted and changed things, and there's been some other changes since 8th dropped. But the idea that the Adeptus Mechanicus had a prohibition on artificial intelligence comes from second edition. Obviously, this comes out of the ancient cataclysmic war between humans and sentient machines, which, as we talked about in our Dune series, was inspired directly by Dune. This is second edition. Second edition, a lot of the stuff that we've talked about novel-wise that has gone into changing or forming the lore came out of the very, very tail end of first edition and the beginning of second edition. Now, to get to what you were talking about, the first model set I ever purchased in 1992 was the 5-man Eldar box of fire dragons.
Still playable, isn't it?
They are still in my army today because I shit you not, the current fine cast models are just resin sculpts taken off of the 1992 pewter fire dragon set. They are still the same model. Since second edition, the Eldar Fire Dragons have not been set up.
See?
However,
can you see that down? Hold it. Let me see. Where is it?
Right behind your shoulder right there. Yep.
See that down there?
Yep.
Okay. Technically, those are playable. Those are all second and third edition Space Marines. But you know what? Not really.
And there are, like, if you have a second edition Space Marine hero and then you bought a fifth or sixth edition Space Marine hero, because let's face it, that was probably the last time that Space Marines really got a major upgrade, was like 7th edition.
Before Primaris.
They look different.
Yeah.
But being somebody who owns a very large Eldari force, my models were all sculpted between 1992 and 1997. Yep. I will have shortly more modern models, because I have a bunch of Void Scar that I'm starting to mix in and some other stuff. But the majority of my Eldar battle force is between 1992 and 1997.
Yeah.
Now, I did say that I bought my first kit in 1992. I started playing, in air quotes, in second edition. However, I had 5 models, and we honestly did something a little bit closer to like Confrontation or D&D or Rogue Trader back then, because we just didn't have enough models.
Army men were cheap.
However, I did play several games as orcs because we had a lot of orc models from different board games.
Yes.
How much gaming did you do in second edition?
A fair amount, but then it wrapped into third edition, was a more playable game.
There is a, I think it's Retroflex Gaming. They're on YouTube and they play second edition games now.
Yeah.
They play with the second edition codex. They play with second edition armies. They play with second edition everything. And then they do battle reports, and they're really fun to watch.
I played a fair amount, and it was just right. I was moving into historical war games at this time.
Okay.
Yeah, and 92, 93. So I then started moving more into the fringe. I played second edition. I played third edition. Everything else sort of blurs together as we move forward in that. I mean, 7th edition, I never played, was supposed to be 4th.
So I didn't play 7th.
There are a bunch of, you go on Facebook, there are a bunch of people from that play 3rd edition.
Yeah, there's a lot of 3rd edition players.
And there are a bunch of 2nd edition players too. And then a bunch of, they just call themselves firstborn players.
Yeah, just play the old Marines.
Just play the old Marines. Yeah.
The second edition, we got a bunch of codices outlining the armies that had playable faction lists. We had Angels of Death,
which I think was interesting.
Yeah, Space Wolves, Sisters of Battle, and this is where all the old Sisters. So those of you who are familiar with the re-release of the plastic Sisters of Battle, second edition had metal Sisters of Battle, Imperial Guard, Chaos, Eldar, Orcs, Tyranids, and the Assassin's Codex. And I own the Sister of Battle one, the Eldar one, and the Tyranid one.
I've got Angels of Death. What I said, it's interesting because that it's Dark Angels and Blood Angels.
Right, right.
Together. When did was Demon Slayer's first edition or was it second?
Third edition.
Oh, it's third edition. Okay.
We'll talk about it here. Okay. Pretty soon. The next one on the list is actually the second edition of Epic, which was in 1994. And oddly enough, there were two rule sets released, and one was called Space Marine and one was called Titan Legions.
Yeah.
which sounds a lot like the first edition release.
So I've got, I don't have physical copies of these. I have the anymore. I've got the, PDFs out of all these. By the way, all these old rules you can find online, and since they are...
They're legacy rules, so they're usually free.
Legacy rules, I'm not like... You have to search them down, but like I'm not saying that you should try to like find current published stuff.
Yeah.
And break the law doing that. But these things from like 20 years ago, I as far as I'm... 30 years ago?
Up until the re-release of of Games Workshop's new website, which happened like
you could find recently, all this stuff online.
A lot of this stuff was on their website for free. Like the Battlefleet Gothic rules used to be just on their website for free because it was
most
no longer
of the rules
a supported
for
game.
Epic Apocalypse.
Yeah, same with the Epic stuff.
Yeah.
So the big thing that second edition Epic introduced was rules for Space Marines, obviously, Imperial Guard, Renegades, which all came out of one of the books. Or I'm sorry, the original releases included the Armies of the Imperium, so the Space Marines and the Imperial Guard. But then there was a Renegades book, which introduced Chaos and Eldar, Orcs and Squats. And then there was a Warlords book. I take that back.
Okay, so
the Renegades book introduced Chaos and Eldar. Yeah. The Orc and Squat Warlords book introduced Orcs and Squat Hive Squats.
It was just Orcs and Squats.
Hive Wars was Tyranids. And then White Dwarf added a bunch of other stuff, as they always do.
Yeah. So you had, every month you had a section that was for Epic. You had a section. You often had a section when it was coming out for Blood Bowl. You had a section for Battle Gothic, you had the section for 40K, you had all that. And a lot of the rules and all, as well as scenarios and all, were released this way. They redesigned a lot of the minis. Well, first of all, they came out with new minis.
Yeah. 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 Because they came out with the Tyranids and the Eldar and the Orcs and the.
In Space Marine 1, you only had one sculpt of Space Marine.
Yes.
Basically, just a guy holding a bolter. Or you had two. I think you also had Bissell.
The missile launcher guy. Yep.
And then when you came out with the second edition, that's when you had things like command squads, you had captains, and you still had just the regular tactical guys and the missile launcher guys. Guard had various different sculpts, and you had a bunch of different sculpts for the orcs, a bunch of different models. Squats and all, so they became much more detailed and a lot more vehicle.
Always
been vehicle oriented.
I was going to say the Space Marines got their new Land Raider Mark One and Rhinos, which were just updates on the originals. Yeah. The Orcs got battle wagons. The Grav Falcon for the Eldar came out. It looks like they also released the first Imperial Warlord Titan Mark One in plastic, which was nicknamed the Beetle due to the way that it looked.
Yeah, I have a couple of those.
And then at this era, the Games Workshop Studio Army colors were Blood Angels, so red, and then the Alatok Craft World for the Eldar. And that was the big thing that they pushed in this era. And this is the first time that we're mentioning what the studio colors are, because Games Workshop at this point, usually as an edition would drop, they would feature another chapter or another whatever would become the studio army. So they wouldn't paint like only Ultramarines or only whatever. They would pick something new as they moved forward.
Yeah, that's why when I started doing Epic, all my guys were red.
Right. Because Blood Angels they were pushing.
But it got monotonous because they also did a lot of Cult of Speed for the Orcs, and they were red. And then everything was red.
Yeah. And then I was going to say, I think the Imperator class Titan came out, the Mork Orc, the not Mork, the Orc Mega Gargants came out.
Mm-hmm.
Other Mega class vehicles all came out of this era.
I have a whole bunch of those right over there. Two Imperator Titans. I have, three, because one is, two are Emperor class, and one's a, what is a Warmonger. And then, I've got two Mega Gargants sitting behind me. What you?
If you've ever seen any of the
official... You can see them right there in the background.
Oh, nice. If you've ever seen any of the official Exodite Eldar sculpts, I think you could get... Yeah, special order were Eldar Exodites and Space Marines. They had special vehicles for the Space Marines and the Eldar Exodites that you could order during second edition Epic.
By the way, this is Draken painting. If you go... his stuff on YouTube for Epic scale stuff is amazing. Not on YouTube, on Instagram.
Yeah, there's some cool stuff. Although they were never officially released.
No.
Another thing that was interesting about this entire time of Games Workshop series is when you would get Games Workshop history, not series. And the Games Workshop's history is in White Dwarf, there would be a tearaway catalog sheet in the back, and you could order things off of that tearaway that were made to order. So you would get like an Eldari Exodite. And that was the only way you could get it. It wasn't in stores, so it wasn't an official release. You were still buying it from Games Workshop, but it wasn't a mass-produced official release.
Yeah.
I guess is the way to look at it. So the third edition of Epic came out in 1997, which was just before the third edition of 40K. I don't know why I conflated them in my mind, but I did. I don't know a lot about this edition. I know that this is kind of when they stopped. This is when it. If you were to say it reached a height of popularity, this is when it reached a height of popularity, but it never was extremely popular.
So this is weird. Third edition is considered the best edition by the game designer.
Yeah, because this is the one that they like reformatted all of the rules on it.
So the problem with second edition is what a lot of people thought is it's too granular. It's, you could put like, there are too many different weapons that you can put on everything. And so you either really like the crunchy game. You know, there are people out there. So like there are people that hate 10th edition because everything costs the same. 10th edition 40K. It's like,
right.
You load them out. There's no different points value. And then there are people like, oh, this makes it so much easier to build an army.
Right.
Same thing happened in 3rd edition. They took out some of that and people hated it. But it was also designed for to be a truly epic scale game with lots and lots. It's the best way to deal with a lot of units on the board. And that's what it was designed for. Because if you have to roll 57 different dice rolls,
right,
to take care of all your different weapons, it just slows everything down.
And that was really what Jervis Johnson and Andy Chambers did, right? They came in to streamline and fix a lot of the rules. They wanted to keep the tactical stuff and make sure that there was still a little bit of luck and all of that, but they wanted to make it more playable, essentially.
Yeah, they wanted to make it more playable. So they thought it was great. They came out with, there were two magazines that were released along with this. There was the Epic 40,000 magazine, and then there was Firefight magazine. And this game lasted about 6 months.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's as true anymore, but I know that back in the day when you would look for epic scale stuff like to buy, like secondhand, mm-hmm. most of it was from this era.
Yeah, they put out, I mean, there was a third edition box set that was Orcs and Space Marines.
Right.
People really like this. They're trying to bring it back. There's a guy that's doing something he calls it Epic Remastered, which is basically the 40,000 rule set. And this was the last one where they released minis.
Right. And they released a ton of them. Like they tripled the size of the vehicle catalogs. And by that, I mean, like, you no longer had Land Raider 1 and Land Raider 2. You now had like Malkadors and you had like Shadow Swords. All the sort of stuff that we're seeing now started to pop up. They vastly grew all of the Eldar line. And again, I had mentioned just a couple of minutes ago with second edition Epic, this is when the studio had started to sort of pick a flagship that they would use. Yeah. And I think In third edition, it was the Beltane and Eidyn craft worlds were what they painted a lot of. But they also did a lot of orc stuff. And I can't remember the orc one. But this is also when you started to get the abnormal size, like the marines in a line, right?
Yeah. Well, no, second edition. Or really, they talk about 2.5 switched a lot to the strip bases from the square bases. Okay. Strip bases are cool because you can like put them on the bases and paint them on the bases.
But third edition was when strip bases were in the box. It was the first time they were in the box. Okay.
Yeah, it was.
And this is also the era where Forge World got in. I mean, you know, as far as the development of everything goes, this is right around the time that Forge World Specialty started being part of Games Workshop. But Forge World did a lot of expansion for Epic specifically, right? Yeah. They had different Titans and all of that.
You could get all this stuff. There was a lot of stuff coming out of Forge World. There were also, this was popular enough, there were a lot of both recasters and formware. The formware is, you know, stuff that looked like sort of like GW stuff, but not completely like GW stuff. And so there's a lot of, obviously this was pre-3D printing. So there were a lot of companies that were producing, especially models in metal.
Yeah.
That were like it. I mean, it's pretty easy to...
I remember guys modifying BattleTech minis too, to use them as Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Because BattleTech was... This was second edition BattleTech, this is second edition BattleTech as well.
So like these are not.
Yeah, those tanks are from a different game.
Yeah, I'm like saying those are not.
That Titan is from, that's an Imperator class Titan, but yeah,
no,
those tanks
that,
are. That's a Reaver.
That's a Reaver from Adeptus Titanicus. This is a modern photo. So.
But those tanks are definitely like from something else. But yeah, I know what you're talking about. Micro Machines had an entire, I can't remember the name of the line, but there was an entire line of like tanks. I've got one somewhere still banging around, but there was like APCs and tanks that got mixed in a lot. This is an interesting era.
War
engines, you're right.
That was the word I was looking at when we were talking about the land train.
Oh yeah. But yeah, so you were saying this game only, so this is the one that a lot of people specifically talk about because the gameplay was sped up and simplified, but as far as how popular it was, it didn't last long.
No, because the whole thing was that I think it was too big of a change.
Okay.
And people didn't like it.
No, nobody. The people that were dedicated, because this is a dedicated player base game. You have to have guys that are already in this game to keep this game going.
So you could start reading the magazines that came out in third edition.
Right.
And they're already making significant changes, like a couple of issues in. And then all of a sudden, it's Epic Armageddon.
Right.
And Epic Armageddon 4th edition did not come out. Do you have a date when it came out? You've got 3rd edition 40K here. You don't. But it came out very shortly after that. So
it may be a lot of them are considered to be part of the same, if that makes any sense. Let me see.
Technically, it came out in 2003.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So we are going to talk about it. We will talk about it next episode.
Yeah.
Fourth edition.
The third edition Epic was actually out for a couple of years, but people.
But it wasn't enjoyed that much, is what you're saying. It wasn't played that much.
But they came out, there was enough time for a lot of minis to be released. So people right now,
I remember going and buying them at the secondhand bin in like 2002, 2003. Yeah. We would just buy Epic miniatures.
Oh, I know people that bought like almost entire stores out.
Yeah. Well, so 3D, not 3D, hobby stores used to have big bins of just bits, and you could go in and like fill up a solo cup full of bits, and you would pay like $2 or $3. It really irritates me that it's not a thing anymore, because I feel like there are more bits now that are just in people's personal collections that they don't need. But I remember doing this, and we would go in and we would just dip solo cups to get bits, usually for terrain builds, and we'd end up with all of these Epic figures. And I've got them. I mean, they're still in my bits collections. I'll be digging through bits collections or something, and I'll come across a strip of like 5-6 guardsmen, or a strip of a bunch of I think I've got a strip of old dreadnoughts, and I mean it's only 3 on a little chunk, but and it's not official. I mean, like, they're official models, but they're glued to like a piece of clear plastic that is definitely not a strip base.
Well, the thing is, as an aside, the rules throughout Epic until the current edition, you have to be on 25 millimeter round bases.
Right.
For like sight lines. But up until then, bases were, they could be no smaller than 5 millimeters in any one direction and no larger than 40 millimeters in any other direction. But they could be any combination in between.
Yeah. Yeah. The standard sizes were 20 by 20 for the square and then 10 by 40. And this is all millimeter.
12 by 40.
It's all millimeter. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, but not inches. Rule specifically said you could have like between, like infantry would have between 3 and 5 models per base. And the base could be, had to basically be at least 20 millimeters in one direction, no smaller than 5 millimeters in the other direction, but could be up to 40 millimeters. So you could have a 40 by 40 base would be legal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You could have like 20. The thing is that when you did close combat, it talked about base contact. And
right.
So there were optimal sizes. Or,
so you could play for advantage. You could base size for advantage.
Yeah, you didn't want a 45-40 base for infantry because your opponent could stack up a whole bunch. Third edition, it didn't matter as much, but second edition, it really did. But they were not standards. They were not the they came with bases in the box, but you didn't have to use them. And people were using pieces of cardboard,
clear
acrylic, whatever they wanted to do. Round bases later on.
So they buffed out enough of the cracks in the armor of the rule set, and then they just kept going and they buffed in new cracks.
Yeah. So people play second edition and people play fourth edition, and then a few people play third edition, but it is really the bastard child of specialist
games. Interesting. Well, the last one that we're going to talk about today in part one, because unfortunately, or fortunately, maybe, I feel fortunately, third edition 40K ushered in a lot. We got an official Necromunda release during third edition as far as a new book. It was, so Confrontation was just in White Dwarf. Necromunda was a book that was published. We also got the 54 millimeter Inquisitor rule set. We got Battlefleet Gothic. We got some stuff to talk about. But first off is the third edition of Warhammer 40K. It concentrated on streamlining the rules for large battles and made it notably easier for beginners to get into the game. And one of the main ways that they did it was the rule book was available alone, or the full rule book was available in a boxed set of Space Marines, which was 1 10-man tactical squad with a sergeant, a missile launcher, and a flamer, and their redesigned land speeder raider, which has now been redesigned again, but it came with a heavy bolter. I've got like 3 of these old land speeders. I love them. And the newly introduced, the new faction in third edition at release, there were 5 new additions that were, 5 new factions, excuse me, not additions, but 5 new factions that were released in third edition. But the first one, the one at the beginning, was the Dark Eldar, now called the Jukari. You got 20 Calibite warriors in it, and the studio box established the basic look, the studio art for the box, the studio paint job, introduced the basic paint job for the Eldari, the Dark Eldar, or the Jukari, I'm sorry, that's what they're now called, which has kind of come all the way up. If you look at the studio box art for the Jukari now, it's the studio box art that was established in third edition. But on the Space Marine side, they focused on the Black Templars. This was my first big dive into Warhammer 40K. A buddy of mine bought and split 2 boxes. So we each got a rule book. We each got a terrain set. We each got the blast mark, the blast templates. Remember blast templates? We each got the little... Are they back in Imperial? Oh, awesome. We each got 2 of the little tiny red ruler sticks that you could whip the shit out of each other with. I'm sure there was an other purpose for them, but that's what they were used for, was beating your buddy. But yeah, I got all the Dark Eldar. He got all of the Black Templar. And that was it. That was the first huge jump. I probably, until 9th edition, So we're going to get into a really weird wasteland, because even though there were additions that came out between third edition and seventh edition, between third edition and seventh edition, there was a weird thing where a lot of codexes didn't change. The main rules would change to make like movement easier or line of sight easier. Or
yeah, but they wouldn't come rules, out with new codexes.
But the codexes wouldn't change. So I probably played more, and the way that I feel a lot of people that played during this is specifically played competitive during this time look at it. I played a lot of third edition, fourth edition, and 4.5 games. I played more of those than anything else until ninth edition. And then ninth edition, I far surpassed that because I was playing like two games a week at one point. My Dark Eldar ended up growing to a fully fledged Dark Eldar force with like 45 jet bikes. I mean, just an insane amount of Dark Eldar warriors because they were really cheap. They were like Imperial Guard cheap. But yeah, third edition was pretty, it was my first big jump into playing competitively, I guess. How about you? What was your third edition 40K official release life?
For me, third edition is still cemented in my mind what a tactical squad is and all. Cause yep. I remember that. It's like, okay, so you break it up. You got two halves. You got a five man, usually with the missile launcher. And then you've got the other five man that includes the sergeant. And yep. Of course, if you're going to go with a devastator squad, it's got like, you know, three missile launchers, not one. And that's what it is for Space Marines. I really wish that I had gotten into Eldar. I mean, what I really should do is downsize all that crap that I have up there that are in boxes that haven't been opened, right. Sell them all off, decide on something like Eldar that I just want to do, and start with the older ones and just like slowly build up and paint an army.
Yeah.
More as a hobby. But, you know, far as we're concerned, there was first edition, second edition, third edition, seventh edition, then eighth, ninth, and tenth.
We're going to talk about fourth edition, fifth edition, and sixth. And there's definitely some really cool things that came out of those editions that we're going to talk about Kill Team. We're going to talk about Cities of Death. But realistically, third edition solidified the way that Warhammer was played until seventh.
It was almost like I really think of the stuff, looked into it because I'm an old fart. So
right.
I belong to. And by the way, I do not like share stuff with family on Facebook. I go on Facebook because it's the modern bulletin board.
100%. Yeah, use it for your interests. Do not use it to connect with you. You're going to find out things about your family that you don't want to know.
No, I don't. I used to use it for like business, and I have not like unfriended all those people. I just stopped following them, so I don't see anything. You know what my feed is? It's all 40K.
Yep, same.
Camping, off-road stuff. It used to have guns, and I've gotten rid of most of the gun stuff.
Most of mine is 40K and music industry stuff, because that's other than my day job as somebody who works in the toy industry, 40K and the music industry are the other two industries that I'm part of. So
it's much, yeah, they don't have threads the same way, but it is much easier to
organize conversations,
to talk about some things. It's, you know, it's basically sharing pictures about our hobbies, talking about rules, getting into those discussions. And being an old fart, I've really gotten into some of the third edition stuff.
Oh yeah,
for a while. And I was collecting third edition Space Marines. I've got
so many
1500 points there.
I don't
that
even
are playable.
I don't even play points. Space Marines, and I've got at least 2,000 to 3,000 points.
I keep falling into the Space Marines, and you've seen when I've been on here, like I'm like, I'm starting a this army, I'm starting a that army. You know how far I get with it? I get far enough that I get frustrated and I strip them because they don't interest me.
Yeah. But most of our conversations, aside from production meeting stuff, are, hey, what about this color scheme? We've got a lot of hobby. You and I have a lot of hobby specific conversations.
If I look over there, I've got stuff that has been sitting in alcohol for God knows how many months. I am so glad that GW plastic
doesn't dissolve
in like isopropyl.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's just sitting in there. I've got some.
I'll deal with it later. I know that I've got stuff that's been in my ultrasonic cleaner for like 3 months.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. I'm like, oh, I really need to do something with that. Like, but it's toxic, and I don't want to throw it away.
Right.
But just like everybody's like, oh, what should Henry Cavill play? I mean, like, just don't have him play a Space Marine. God, I just don't want a 40K Space Marine show.
Yeah.
I want a Sci-Fi's Kane Space 40K show. But that's beside the point. No, Space Marines are boring, as far as I'm concerned. I'd love to start I tried Tau. Yeah, that doesn't really scratch my... You know, Tau came out at this point in time.
Yeah, I was going to say, so yeah, to get to that, the playable factions towards the end of third, we got 4 new codexes on top of everything that we've talked about before. Yeah. We got the Necron and the Tau, mm-hmm. and these are the 2 Xeno species. And to be clear, Necrons did have a few models before this, but they didn't have an army. This is the first time they got a full army. And the Tau were the new design thing. It was the thing they wanted to do, and they had specifically been designed to target the rise of popularity of the game here in the United States. So the Tau were the thing that was made to appeal to our more Battletech, Macross-centric viewpoint. I know a lot of people put it, or not Macross, Robotech, Battletech-centric viewpoint. I know a lot of people now compare them to Gunpla and Gundam stuff, but the Tau were designed... Battletech was a very, very popular game in the United States, and so was Robotech. And even though both of those things have Japanese anime and bunny quotes equivalents, neither one of those were Japanese anime properties.
I played the Battletech role-playing game. That was from Palladium.
It was super popular. And same with Robotech. And you know, Robotech was based on an anime.
I mean, Robotech.
Yeah. But basically, giant combat mechs were popular in the U.S. So the Tau were designed to take advantage of that. And we've talked about a little bit more of how the Tau came about. And that is definitely a much longer story for another time. But the other two armies were part of the Inquisition. And that was the Ordo Malleus, which was the Demon Hunters, and the Ordo Hereticus, called the Witch Hunters. And while both of these had army elements that were in other supplemental material, earlier stuff, Realms of Chaos, Sisters of Battle, etc., this was the first time that they had their all-new artwork and all-new army list. And you brought this up. You brought up Demon Hunters earlier. Demon Hunters was a third edition thing. Demon Hunters and Witch Hunters, both of these codexes, don't exist anymore. They're gone. And their model lines are almost entirely gone. You can still get some of them as one-offs. The Crusader ended up in Blackstone Fortress, but the Crusader used to have 5 sculpts, not 2 sculpts or 1 sculpt or whatever it is now. If you remember any of the Death Cult assassins, the girls that used the twin blades, those were all came out of this. Inquisitor Greyfax is still around. The Demon Hunter book very largely became the Grey Knight book. The Demon Hunter Codex became the Grey Knight Codex, but not a lot of the stuff that existed in the Demon Hunter and the Witch Hunter Codexes exist anymore. It's actually kind of sad because there were a lot of stuff that in here that was really cool. That'll wrap it up for our third edition coverage. However, part of that third edition coverage is you were mentioning you're kind of looking for a Xeno species that you want to collect. Is that?
Yeah. I mean, so absolutely no Eldar.
Okay. I would say Eldar.
Yeah,
Eldar, but that's because I like Eldar.
I have a ton of, because we've talked about before about the Imperium magazine. I've got a ton of, what are the robot dudes? Why am I blanking out on that?
Now?
Yeah, no.
Necron.
I've got a ton of Necron, but, and I sort of like how goofy the Eldar
looks. Yeah, I mean,
the helmets
a lot
are goofy.
I know a lot of people get on the helmets and like, they don't bug me that much. I think they kind of look neat. I also specifically target the non-ridiculous ones. The Dark Eldar helmets honestly bug me more because they're like twice as tall.
Here, hold on. I'm sending a link. Why don't you pull that? Okay.
How are you sending it?
Right there. It's in the chat.
Oh, I see it. Don't send me something I want. Hey, I have this box. These guys are still in my army today. Old Guardian.
That's the sort of thing that I'd like to collect and just start like, not like Just like
their helmets aren't
army.
That bad, man. Huh? Their helmets aren't that bad. These helmets aren't that bad.
Yeah, no, those guys are pretty good.
Yeah, no, these are a lot of fun. This is the 1997 sculpts. I know it says 1999 up here, but these are the 1997. Yeah, these are pretty cool. In fact, I've got a lot of these, and they're relatively easy to find secondhand at like store marketplace buys. That's where I would go. I wouldn't necessarily do eBay because I think you'll pay too much.
What the hell is a store marketplace buy?
So like a local gaming store will have like 2 days a year where everybody who plays the game comes and like a open marketplace. There's so much Eldar stuff because again, this sculpt right here was the sculpt from 1997 until like 2021.
Yeah.
Or 22, whenever the new sculpt, this was the standard sculpt for like 20 years. There are so many of these out there.
Yeah. I just sort of like, you know, just start like, I'm just going to paint a box slowly. I'm not painting a box to play. I just
You're
want
just, to. Just to have your hobby time.
Yeah. And get then you, you could talk me to what is. Who am I going to?
You should do Eldar.
Yeah, well, no, well, I mean, but
we got like, a whole part Eldar? Two for me to convince you, but convert to my side, the dark side.
I was just looking at this skin. I do like this color. I just have
that's
to
an
put,
awesome.
I have to put some accent blue on it. See how it looks because all it my guys really are good. Blue.
Looks really good.
That's the whole thing about Epic, man. It's yeah, the one thing that you, contrast paint
really works.
Yeah. So small.
All right, guys. Well, that'll wrap it up for part one of our Warhammer Origins, a complete timeline. We'll be back with a part two where we will talk about 4th through 9th edition, as well as Battle Fleet Gothic. We're going to talk about some more Necromunda stuff because Necromunda's had a couple of updates. Obviously, Legion Imperialis is now out, so we have an entire new Epic game to talk about. And we will help Chalk join the correct side and start collecting a 1990s based Eldar army.
I'm actually sort of, it was either that or orcs, but I think Eldar.
There you go. If you want to get into contact with us about our episodes or any part of the show, you can reach us at underthehiveofmadness@gmail.com. Chalk, where can people find you online as far as your various content or get in contact with you other than our Discord? Because obviously you're on our Discord.
Yes, I can be found on TikTok doing anthropology, archaeology, and 40K stuff at Chalk Balam. I think it's _. Hold on. Let me make sure exactly how to spell that.
We'll drop the spelling in the...
Okay,
we'll
I think it's Chalk Balam _ because... somebody else has Chalk Balam.
And you got like a link tree or something we can drop, right? yeah.
I'm also on Instagram at Chalk Balam where you can see my Disney stuff as well. And then if you're interested in Epic, I've actually got this fairly popular now Facebook.
Yeah, you've got
page,
a really good Facebook group.
Which is Legion Imperialis. Epic Battles in the 31st Century, and I have I'm up to 5,200 members.
Look at that.
This was supposed to be a fun little hobby thing that nobody would pay any attention to.
And then it became a big thing.
It's only been going for like a couple of months.
Yeah, you started it like 6-7 months ago.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of cool stuff there. A lot of the guys post some really, a lot of your community members post some really cool stuff. Not only will we drop the spelling to Chalk's stuff, as well as our own links down there, we'll have the link to his link tree, but you can also join our Discord and you can talk to Chalk as well as everybody else in our awesome community. We talk about the lore, hobby, and tactics of Warhammer 40K. We also talk about other topics such as Warhammer, Age of Sigmar, Magic the Gathering, role-playing games, video games, and a lot more. You can also find the podcast on Facebook, Instagram, or at our website, underthehiveofmadness.com. If you'd like to help our podcast grow, you can do that by liking and reviewing us wherever you get your podcast fix. Our home is on Spotify, but we are also on Apple, Google, Audible, and many more. And we are on Patreon. That's www.patreon.com/underthehiveofmadness. All Patreon members get access to a video podcast. In this case, you can see Chalk and my beautiful faces, as well as experience minimal editing. So all of the times that I stumble over common English words for no reason.
And every time I say fuck, which He's going to edit out.
Those don't get edited out. The number one rule of the podcast is if during the podcast somebody other than me says this needs to be edited out, I will not edit it out. All Patreon members also get access to our quarterly painting contest, which has been on hiatus for the end of 2023, just because of a lot of the different stuff that we were going through. But it is returning in 2024 with our Lunar New Year, Year of the Dragon contest. Rules will be out on our Discord either right before this episode drops or right around when this episode drops. So if you're interested, you want to join our Patreon for $3 and you want to take place in the Year of the Dragon painting contest, now is the time to do it. Plus, we have perks at higher levels, such as giveaways. We've given away dry palettes. We've given away objective markers. We're getting ready to give away some other merchandise. So go on over and check that stuff out. Oh man, Volkites. Never heard of them. Never seen them. But damn if I don't love them. This has to be the shiniest new boomstick we've found on any of these expeditions. Got the range of a plasma rifle and the method to burn through the wall like a blast from a volcano.
And it shakes so much when you shoot.
Working hard to be everything that your mama warned you about while shattering whatever's left of the Arbides piece, we are 665.66 UHMR Chemrat Radio. Reminding all of you Chemrats, Hive Mice, and Sump Ghoulies to keep those dials fixed right here. Same ratty frequency for a dose of the same ratty ass attitude. In the Underhive's murk, where danger is rife, the four-armed emperors are a deadly, chilly sight. Children, my dears, stay close, don't dare to roam, for their claws will ensnare, rending shadows from your bone.
Peace out, guys.
Read a fucking book.